This is the Gentle Rebel Podcast, episode 310.
The Gentle Rebel Podcast.
For introverts, highly sensitive people, and creative misfits.
Hello and welcome to the Gentle Rebel Podcast, where I explore how to live a more meaningful life as a sensitive, creative type person without getting overwhelmed by all the noise and absurdity and chaos of our modern world. My name is Andy Mort. I'm a songwriter, a performer, a creativity coach, and a massive introvert as well. And I love helping other gentle rebels find the courage and perspective required to make their own quiet stand for what truly matters in life to them. Today I want to talk about becoming. Before we get into it, I just want to say, hope you're doing well, you're keeping safe, you're taking care. We are still in kind of global pandemic mode here. Don't know for how much longer. It's all a little bit kind of messy at the moment. So we will see. But I just wanted to acknowledge that at the start of this episode so that, you know as you're listening that this is coming from that era. Just for context. Not that it's that important. So I seem to talk about becoming, this idea of becoming, quite a lot. I kind of see it as a permanent state of being. You know, we're forever becoming what we're in the process of becoming. That's kind of the nature of life. You know, change is one of the very few inevitabilities that we have. And this is perhaps a companion piece to the previous episode that I put out, which was on the theme of static. Perhaps you might think of it as a state of unbecoming, of stuckness, stillness, of being anchored, and dare I say, being locked down. My mind jumped to this idea of becoming after I'd recorded that episode, this sense of getting unstuck, getting unshackled, getting released from things. And then in a more general sense, kind of words like changing, transforming, evolving, growing, developing, exploring, following, leading, testing, trying, experimenting, learning, observing, noticing, reflecting, honing, whittling, crafting, deciding, culling, removing, reviewing. So all these kind of things that are mixed in with this idea of becoming, this idea of transformation, of change, of movement, of dynamism. Becoming is neither good or bad. The idea that we're becoming what we are becoming is just kind of a fact. We're always becoming. We've never truly arrived. And in this sense, it's an idea that we can take really seriously and really delve into for ourselves. And we can enjoy doing that. And we can kind of get somewhere with it as well. It's why I really love the coaching process, because it brings into the present the very powerful truth that the story isn't over. We can take charge of our becoming. We can explore the mountain of possibilities for our lives going forward in a way that brings the possibility together along a simple and tangible path. Within a single acorn is the possibility of an entire oak tree. A whole oak tree is inside that tiny little seed. That's kind of mad when you think about it. I mean, when you like really, really think about that, like, obviously it's not become yet, but it's there. The possibility is there. The possibility has become, but the actual tree is not yet in existence. And this is the case with everything, human beings. The possibility of who we are was in that tiny little egg, and we emerged from within that moment in space and time. I was thinking about the sort of acorn oak tree thing, that that popular Chinese proverb, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. And I think this is something I come back to. It's at the heart of our concept of becoming and how we relate to the possibilities of everyday life. I've recently been listening to Out of Your Mind, which is a collection of seminars and talks by the philosopher Alan Watts. And I found it an amazing companion to me during lockdown. It's been just a lovely thing to listen to at different points. And this collection of talks opens with Alan Watts speaking about the power of language in framing the image of the world that we carry around with us, you know, kind of worldview. The fundamental level of how we interact with and how we understand, I suppose, our place in it. And he calls these two main models in the West, the ceramic model and the fully automatic model. So the ceramic model of the universe is based on the book of Genesis, which is what Judaism and Islam and Christianity all derive their basic picture of the world from. This image just sees the world as an artifact. In other words, it's made in the same way that a potter takes clay and makes pots, or a carpenter takes wood and makes tables and chairs. And this sees God, Alan Watts says, as a technician who has in mind a plan, fashions the universe in accordance with that plan. And so the world consists of stuff, primordial matter, and the potter imposes his will on it, making it whatever he wants. In this image, God makes a clay figurine out of Adam and then breathes life into him. The fundamental part of this image is that the stuff of the world is impressed onto the world from outside. So everything requires an external intelligence and an external energy to bring it to life, to add meaning and sense to it. We inherit a conception of ourselves as being manufactured artifacts. And Watts says that within this concept, we hear children ask parents things like, how was I made? Or who made me? And that kind of stuff. And he suggests that children elsewhere, you know, in Chinese cultures or Hindu traditions, might ask a parent, how did I grow? Which he points out is an entirely kind of different, it comes from a completely different premise. And this is a really interesting point. You know, so much of our language is based on the idea that we are made, that we are here, you know, for a reason, that we are placed here, that, you know, all of this stuff and all of these other metaphors that kind of place us here, but without a sense of coming from within here. And Alan Watts says, when you make something, you put it together, you arrange parts, you work from the outside to the in, like a sculpture. But when something grows, it works from the inside to the outside, expanding, burgeoning and blossoming. The original simple form progressively complicates itself. That's that idea of the oak tree. Simple form in the acorn, progressively complicating itself and growing. There's a fundamental difference between the made and the maker. There's this kind of great otherness in the thing that is made and the thing that makes the thing that is made. And the ceramic model emerged in cultures where governance was monarchical. So you know, the maker of the universe was conceived at the same time as the king of the universe. The, you know, people who are oriented to the universe in that way feel related to basic reality as a subject to a king. They're on humble terms in relation to whatever it is that works this whole thing. And he makes this link between the you know, the layout of a Protestant church and a courtroom, and between like traditional like Catholic church layouts and a palace. And so both of these images containing within them this separateness between the power, the power figure and the power's subject. So whether it's the king or the judge, and then the people who are subjected to the power that comes from that position, that symbolic position. And the evolution of Western thought changed into what Alan Watts calls the fully automatic model of the universe, where Western science became prevalent over religion in forming our image of the world around so-called laws of nature. And so the potter laid down the laws, and the law of God or nature, the logos, these laws are like tram lines or train tracks along which everything moves in a somewhat orderly fashion. You know, everything responds, everything obeys the plan. And science then allowed people to hold this image without needing to believe in God, because the hypothesis of God doesn't help us make predictions about the future. In other words, it doesn't make any difference to the predictions of what is going to happen if you say that everything is controlled and governed by God or not. The same things will happen in accordance with the kind of scientific predictions that you can make. But in this fully automatic model, the hypothesis of law remains. So regularity and consistency that allows for predictions to be made is in essence what is described as law. And so he says, you know, remove the lawmaker, keep the law. The universe is a mechanism functioning in accordance with regular clock-like mechanical principles. And behind this model is the notion that reality itself is blind energy. The world is nothing but unintelligent force. It's only the result of this exuberant energy and a mix of fluke and blind luck that we have people, people with values, reason, languages, cultures, and love. And in this concept, we must fight nature and impose our will upon the world as if it's completely alien to it from the outside. Otherwise, we'll be turned back into nonsense if we're not careful. And so this underpins the idea that, you know, there's this war between man and nature. But Watts describes a more organic model, which points to us being the same as apples that grow off an apple tree. You know, in the same way that an apple tree apples as a verb, you know, an apple tree basically blossoms apples or fruits apples. So he says, yeah, an apple tree apples, which I love. It's just a lovely little image. He says, in the same way as that, the world in which human beings arrive is a world that peoples. The existence of people is symptomatic of the kind of universe that we live in, just as spots on the skin are symptomatic of chicken pox. The main point that Alan Watts makes about these two great images that we have of the world, these conceptions, these myths, calls them myths, images, is that we've been brought up to not feel like we belong in the world. We say, I came into this world, but we didn't. We grew out of it. We grow out of it. Rather than being something that is placed into the world by God or the laws of nature, we are instead grown out of the world. We are symptomatic of a world that peoples. Everything we sense, all that we see, hear, touch, and taste has come out of the world. It's not been placed into it. It's not been put on it. Grasping this as a foundational principle, we can perhaps begin to move away from the scripts that we write for our lives. You know, we're not independent of the world. Trying to find a place to fit into it. You know, that best fit, the thing that we can do to most feel like we kind of fit in and belong. We're actually a fully interdependent part of the universe. We already have our place within it. When we think of the idea of becoming in this context, we can start to see this as a never-ending process of growth, as one of the world's peopled people. And in this sense, we are the produce of a world that produces the most insanely amazing fruit. You know, we don't have to do or achieve anything in order to belong. We don't have to do or achieve anything to be people. We've been born out of the heart of this reality, and as such, we already belong. We are already the fruit. There's nothing more we can do in order to belong any more than we already do. And there's nothing we can do to belong any less. So, why have I said all of that? A bit airy, fairy, and kind of abstract, unimportant, irrelevant. Well, you know, when I first started planning this episode, it really wasn't something I'd considered talking about. And I've spoken before about how I love, you know, taking a word like belonging. You know, when I have a theme for a podcast episode, I just delve into the rabbit hole and end up somewhere, often places that I'm like, wow, I wasn't expecting to go there. And as I was reflecting, this idea, the kind of link with what Alan Watts had spoken about, really grew in its significance in my mind. That the way that we conceive our place in the world directly impacts our relationship with who we are and how we grow as people, and how we see ourselves and how we see the process of our own personal evolution through our lives. If we see ourselves through the ceramic lens, you know, that we've been made, that we're placed into the world in that way. We must have been put here for a reason, to do something in particular, to leave our mark on the world before we leave it again. If we reject the idea of God and embrace a fully automatic model, that then we're cogs inserted into the natural order of things, blindly following the pre-programmed script led by an unintelligent energy that sets the limits and tracks along which we run. If we carry either of these images deeply within, we might really run into obstacles when it comes to embracing a freedom to become what we are becoming. It's an unhealthy crutch to feel like you need to work out what your externally ordained purpose is. If you can't identify it, then you feel completely alienated and out of place in the world. You know, becoming is restricted to an unknowable plan for your life, second-guessing whether or not you're conforming to some preset script by the potter who made you and put you here. Or the idea that we are trammed, running along tracks, conforming to the laws that have been set for us as living beings. We're predictable and governed. This might create an underlying resentment and destructive tendencies to manufacture significance, to beat nature, to dig deeper, to fly higher, to show our dominance over nature and over one another. Becoming is about external growth and being better, hoarding more, flying closer to the sun. And this image leaves us perpetually dissatisfied because it's impossible. So we become alienated from the world around us and from ourselves within. But if we see ourselves as having been peopled from a world that peoples, we may begin to find a more profound sense of freedom in our becoming. The drive for growth is not dictated by inadequacy, by fear of insignificance in the face of nature, or self-berating shame as unworthy sinners in the presence of God. Our becoming is instead rooted in freedom, in connection and love. We have nothing to prove. There is nothing we can do that will make us belong any more than we already do. So we're free to become who we are becoming from a place of abundance instead of a place of fear and a place of loss and a place of scarcity. So, wow, that went to some interesting places. It's time for a song. I think I'm going to break this up. We're going to have a little rest. We're going to have a little breather.
Gravel around your heart grew thick. A message from your TV, your childhood didn't fit. A passive model cradle cat. Support the truth and pin it to the sky while I lie under the doormat. Give me everything you own, so that I won't be alone. All this stuff is weighing me down. I'm shouting, but I can't make any sound. Stains upon your fading mind. Memories of my clock have been bitterly welcome back. Shouting that I can't make any sound. 'cause I don't wanna see you leave. All of this is taking its toll. My whispering is filling the hole.
Podcasts cost money to produce, you know, buying equipment, paying for hosting. Not to mention the time it takes to put these things together. I don't want to have a go at shows that choose to advertise things to cover costs, but I personally wanted to completely avoid going down that route. So the Gentle Rebel podcast is funded 100% by you, the listeners, through Patreon, where for just $3 a month, you get regular unscripted extended play episodes where I share new ideas, background to the songs that I'm playing, and general stuff that's going on in my world and in the world generally. With the hope that it will kind of encourage and support and equip you, my introverted and sensitive friends, on your path of creative misfittery. You get a personal thank you in a future episode, bonus videos and resources in early development, and you can, you know, ask me anything in the private comment area. I just love helping people locate and harness and hone their creative voices. It'd be a joy to do the same with you. So, it's so great to be able to produce this show, and I couldn't do it without the generous support of listeners. Thank you so much to all of you who already are Patreons. You are absolute legends. And if you like the sound of this and fancy earning legendary status in my heart for yourself, then go to patreon.com/AndyMortz. Thank you so much. A huge thanks to Donna Maguire and Julianne Coomer, who both became Patreons since the last episode. Thank you so much to them. You guys absolutely rock. So with this image of the world and our place within it, what does that mean for who we are and what we're becoming? I've been thinking about this a lot in the context of what I've come to see is a really kind of ingrained sense of that ceramic or fully automatic model of the universe. This detachment from having grown from the inside of the seed of the universe, thinking instead like as something placed into the world. I've got a feeling that this shifting concept will take root over time, and that alongside it, a shift in my relationship with the idea of what I am becoming, you know, myself. For many of us, we have quite a self-abusive relationship with who we are and what we think that we should be and all that sort of stuff. You know, a lot of the concepts around self-development are underpinned by a lack that we are always between where we are and where we ought to be, or where we want to be, or where we should be. We berate ourselves and feel shame about the fact that we're not where we aren't. And that's kind of a perpetual position that we always seem to occupy. It doesn't really matter what or where that is. It's why some of those who seem to have it all are still haunted and plagued by the fact that it doesn't satisfy their drive. It's also why some of those who appear to have such little might be happy and content. It's not actually about what we have and where we are and what we've done and all of that sort of stuff. It's actually about our relationship with what we don't have and what where we aren't, and a kind of an acceptance of that and an enjoyment of that, which gives us the freedom to be restricted by the finitude of life. I've always found this a difficult thing to reconcile and work out for myself, you know, how to hold ambitions and desires for change and progress without being driven by the endless pursuit of more. And I guess it comes down to the heart of that drive and where we pin our emphasis. You know, what drives the desire? Why do we want to be in that other place? One cause of becoming in this sense is the drive to satisfy some insatiable thing. The pursuit of happiness is a perfect example. As far as having something to pursue goes, happiness is just about the worst thing you could pick. And there's a reason that this is at the heart of what we think of as a fundamental right in a system of free market capitalism. You know, happiness can be bottled and sold in all manner of containers. And because it's fleeting and momentary, we're always going to think we need to buy more of it. Unless you have a clear concept of what happiness is, you're never going to reach it. You know, a more tangible example might be the idea of enough, which when left to its own devices is abstract and impossible to define. You know, if you say to yourself, "Well, I'm going to keep going until I have enough," whether that's, you know, money, food, health, exercise, work, whatever. If you don't have a concept of what enough actually is, then you're going to keep going until you burn out, you get sick, you hit some emergency, like, you know, a breakdown of a relationship, a health crisis, something where you wake up and think, how have I got here? You know, that kind of thing. And this in itself can be the cause or be a cause of personal becoming, you know, one of those ruptures, a rupture in time where an unexpected event occurs that forces you to change. It's kind of that sense of like, going back to what was is no longer a possibility. The only possibility is what is something else from the path that you've been on. You know, it's like this wall has been put up on the path, so you can't get back. A wake-up call, if you like. You know, something that means you have no choice but to change direction. So relationship breakdowns, health crises, bankruptcy, death of a loved one, that kind of stuff. You know, these are often events that give us an opportunity to take charge of where we are and what we are becoming. And this sense of directed becoming is one that we don't have to wait for the crisis to hit. You know, we can intervene at any point along the road and choose where and what we are becoming, and to really get a sense of why that matters and what that means to us, and that what that kind of ideally will look like for our lives. Again, this is really interesting in coaching. You know, I mentioned that there can be a bit of a self-abusive, never satisfied relationship with self-development. You know, if we're seeking change for change's sake, or constantly looking to hit new goals and achieve new things, and we're constantly looking forward and we're thinking, oh, I've got to get there, I've got to do that, now I've got to get there, I've got to do that. And if we aren't aware of the reasons for our desires and ambitions, we can become self-abusive in that sense. But as we do in coaching, we get beneath the surface of the desires. We peel things back to reach actually the real desires, the real things that matter. And when we get to those successfully, we release ourselves from the drives that might be holding us prisoner with who we believe we should be becoming and what we believe we should be doing. And it's often the presence of like shame that keeps us pursuing things that are actually destroying us. Shame at not only, you know, not being enough for a parent or a teacher. Shame for being humiliated in a PE lesson at school. Shame from growing up in the shadow of the apparently perfect sibling, as we perceived it. Shame that draws from a worldview or a belief system that shaped our view of the world growing up. Shame can encourage us to prove a point, to hide from ourselves, to hold back from being vulnerable, to seek to become everything that we're not, so that no one will ever see what we are, who we are deep down. The part of us that got hurt, humiliated, rejected. And so we commit to becoming the opposite of what we would choose to become if we really thought about it and allowed ourselves to let go of all that baggage. We commit to become the opposite of who we actually are. And so we pursue this path that takes us away from ourselves. And when we get to that place where we shake off all that baggage, we're able to dream. We can hold ambitions and desires without attaching those harmful beliefs around them. Our identity isn't pinned on succeeding in the pursuit, but joy is found in the very process of the pursuit. And it's in this joy that we find little moments of creativity, curiosity, connection, fun, happiness, struggle, passion, purpose, and growth. This is becoming. The choice to select the road on which we want to travel. And this can start when we ask ourselves a question like, well, what do I want instead of this? Not to sow dissatisfaction and regret and wishful thinking onto our lives, but rather to be honest about, you know, who we are, so that we can be free to become who we would choose to keep becoming. This question is somewhere I'd like to start with all my new coaching clients. You know, before thinking about starting a coaching relationship, I invite people to a conversation where I ask just that question. You know, what do you want instead of this? whatever this is. And we begin to peel back the layers of the stories and the voices and the beliefs that have muted the small authentic voice within over many years in many cases. I absolutely love going through this process because we never allow ourselves to ask these kinds of questions of ourselves, or very rarely do. You know, we're so used to going along with how life is, what others want from us, what we believe is expected of us. We very rarely take a moment to ask, well, what do I want instead of this? Whether in a general sense or about specific struggles we might be experiencing in things like our relationships or our health, our work life, our living situation in general, and so on. To give ourselves permission to consider, well, what would I choose instead of this if there were no obstacles? These are the kinds of questions we can really bake into our everyday lives, you know, in journaling, in reflecting, reflective moments. It lies at the heart of becoming, lies at the heart of becoming what we want to be becoming, so that we can work out what it is that we want to be becoming. Because it's very easy to look at this stuff and just think, well, yeah, I know what I want to become. But often that thing on the surface of what we believe we want to become is, as I said before, the opposite of actually what we desire. It's that shame talking. And when we start to do this, we can avoid the drift, the submission to ideas and pressures and demands that don't resonate or fit with those genuine desires. Oh, right, it got heavy again. It's time for another song, after which we will, I don't know, look at some more ways into becoming and some other blockages that we might experience that can get in the way of healthy becoming. And so we'll think about where we encounter those and how we can avoid them and, you know, make the most of other ways of being. To the nearest hill. So I guess a lot of what I said before that song could be summed up like this. We're blocked from becoming who we are becoming when we follow a feeling that something is missing. Most of us are brought up with this mindset that there's always something missing. We're led from one phase to the next, always following this sense that the missing piece needs to be found. It happens through our educational development. You know, we go from one thing to the next, inserting that missing piece. We leave school, we enter the workplace, we rise through the ranks, we own stuff, we hit milestones, even through our relationships, in our hobbies, in our health. You know, you name it, there is always something missing. There is always something to be found somewhere, to be gained, to be added. But rather than something to celebrate and enjoy, the fact that there's something missing is paralleled with an encouraged belief that getting the missing thing will make us feel more complete. The parts of life that we might define as self, who we are, you know, these are the things that are missing, and they're going to be more complete when we find them. You know, this idea of uncovering yourself, finding yourself, discovering who you are, all of that sort of language that we use that kind of promotes and reinforces this sense that you are not whole, you are not complete, you have things missing. And like a game of kind of eternal whack-a-mole, all it does is reinforce this unattainable nature of becoming. We get frustrated, we feel unfulfilled, we think that we are doing it wrong, that we haven't yet found the true answer, the right path, our calling, whatever it might be, however you might want to describe it. And as Alan Watts says, this is akin to looking for your head. You can't see it, so you think you've lost it. But really, we're within it already. So this idea that actually we are already complete, we are already enough, we are already whole. That's when we look at healthy expressions of becoming, healthy ways of relating to this idea of becoming, has to start with this premise that actually there is nothing missing. You are already complete. And this is linked to the powerful concept of grace. You know, so many of those who were involved in the Serenity in the Trenches project that I created at the end of last year, I asked what they wish people knew or could see or believe about themselves. And the same answer came back from so many of them. And it's this idea that you are enough, just as you are. You don't need to do anything to be worthy of love. In the arms of existence, you are accepted and you are enough. I mean, it's easy to say, isn't it? And you might nod along, yeah, that's great. But it's a lot harder to accept your acceptance, to accept that you are accepted, whatever that kind of looks like for you. That's the ultimate challenge. It's full of it's all well and good, but however, if we can get there, we can build our becoming upon this foundation that nothing is missing, drawing from abundance rather than scarcity, from contribution rather than withdrawal. We don't have to prove anything to anyone. We get there, we can just relax and enjoy the life that comes as part of having been peopled for this little season that we've been invited to grow through. Something else that I discovered while recording an extended play episode, it's one of the Patreon exclusive episodes that I put out through the month between these main ones, is an idea around freedom. And as I was talking, it was one of those moments where I was kind of just doing a bit of a brain dump, verbal brain dump. And I recognized this idea of freedom. I get lost in freedom seasons, you know, freedom to versus freedom from. And I've experienced this in particular when it comes to following creative pursuits, but it's relevant to all manner of things that we're developing and growing and changing. You know, embracing the freedom to enjoy things as they are without attaching any sense of desire to my own creativity, to following other things, to getting distracted and going along different lines that I really don't want to be distracted by. What I mean is this, you know, I don't know if you've ever had that thing where you see something new or you have an experience that is different to anything that you've really experienced before, and suddenly you think, oh man, this is it, I need to do this more, or this is the answer to my struggles, or, you know, that's what I want to spend the rest of my life doing, however extreme you take it. And I likened it to those moments at the end of a time with people that you've not seen for a while. You know, usually it's like friends or family. You might have had it with on Zoom with someone during lockdown, and you end the encounter by saying, it's been great, we should do this more, or definitely let's not leave it so long next time, we really need to do this again soon, like let's not, you know, wait as long as we did before. And while it might be exactly what you want, it is some weird attachment that we create to things that we don't actually need a shift of commitment around. And moreover, it takes us out of the enjoyment of the thing itself and into this place where the joy exists on the backdrop of what is missing. You know, the thing that is missing is the very thing itself, just more of it. And so you forget that actually the thing that you're lamenting not having enough of is the thing that you're actually enjoying at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense. That sounds a bit convoluted, but we begin to lament the fact that we don't do the thing that we've got a real kick out of more, rather than enjoying the fact that we've just done it. You know, if we can recognize these times, we can begin to find more freedom from this kind of guilt and this kind of regret, and enjoy freedom to do things once, to do things not very regularly, to see people every so often, and to be satisfied that actually, you know, because I've got friends who I don't see very regularly, and I'm always, I think we probably always say it at the end, like, we should do this more. This has been great. We should do this more. And actually, I don't need to do it more in order to get the joy and the value out of those times that we do it. If that makes sense. I was thinking about this type of freedom in relation to my tendency to listen to different types of music or see people using different creative tools or, you know, marketing things, all that sort of stuff, presenting things in certain ways, you know, certain layouts and designs of websites and that kind of stuff, you know, all the things that we encounter. And I have this tendency to like be tempted to jump from thing to thing as a, oh man, that's it, yeah, I must try that, or yeah, I want to do that. So music would be thinking like, you know, I've enjoyed listening to some jazz or something like that, and I'm like, right, I've got to bring jazz into what I do. I'm going to get trumpets involved. Or, you know, the thing that kind of gave me the self-awareness around this was when I was like, right, I need to write Britpop style songs after enjoying a trip into early to mid 90s British music. It was listening to a Suede album, and I was like, oh man, this is it. Like, I need to write music like this. But what if, rather than thinking like I've got to do it like that because that's like the answer, or that's the way to do it, when I enjoy or connect with something, what if I was just free to simply enjoy it and to connect and to then let go of it, to hold it as something that I'm free from? I'm free from the need to desire it. I'm instead free to simply enjoy and appreciate it. Yeah, it sounds simple, and it might sound stupid to you. This might be something you're like, no, that doesn't resonate at all. I don't know what you're talking about. But as I thought about it, I realized that actually it shows up for all sorts of people in all sorts of ways. We become slaves to our desires, thinking, you know, I must have that. Whether it's, I don't know, another person, a way of life, a bit of food, you know, money, material possessions, experiences, jobs, types of relationships, an extension on your house, all that sort of stuff. And we equate freedom with the freedom to pursue all these whim-like desires that crop up. The idea that freedom is access, as opposed to the other side of freedom, which is the freedom to commit to one thing instead of being a slave to the tyranny of your whim-like desires. When you're free to commit to one thing, you're free from the potential mess, confusion, and chaos from throwing yourself at everything else, believing that freedom is like the access to this cacophony of choice. And you're free to appreciate those things in different ways beyond ownership. If you're free from the need to own, to possess, to acquire, you're free to enjoy stuff in a whole different kind of way. I talk about this in relation to becoming because there are two seasons that we can be aware of. You know, it might be that right now you need the freedom to commit and the freedom from the tyranny of choice. But down the line in a certain area of life, you might actually need the freedom from attachment to one thing. It might be that attaching to one thing is actually, that's the thing that's causing me strain. That's the thing that's causing me struggle. And I'm attached to this idea. I'm attached to this belief that this is the thing that I need to be doing. But actually, I need freedom from that attachment. I need freedom to, you know, experiment and explore everything for a little while. And I kind of love the fact that there is no right way to do this. It's just sort of growing in self-awareness, growing in awareness of our own situations and knowing what is more helpful for us at any one time. And so as we embark on a life of becoming, it seems to be important for us to grasp these ideas. Now, I mentioned the word calling a second or two ago, and I think this, along with purpose and passion, can really hinder our relationship with becoming. In a session I did about creativity in the Haven recently, I talked about the fact that our search for answers and meaning and purpose can cloud our ability to see things properly. We think everything has to have a purpose. Everything is attached to reasons and all that kind of thing. You know, I'm not going to do that. Why would I do that? Like, what's going to be the payoff of doing that? This can be a bit problematic. You know, it's why we adopt conspiracy theory so quickly, I think. You know, this idea that everything is attached to a purpose or a plan. You know, it resonates with the, I guess, negative impact of those ceramic and fully automatic models of the universe that I talked about at the beginning. We come from a place of concrete reasoning. You know, I'm here for a purpose. I just need to find out what that is. This is a line of thinking adopted by all kinds of people. It's not simply aligned to, you know, a religious way of orientating to the world. And from this position, we seek certainty and assurance that we are finding our purpose, that we know our calling, and that we're not wasting our time floundering about in uncertainty. But this attachment to purpose and certainty can be a real problem. It takes us away from creativity and joy. Has us second guessing everything that we do, feeling like there's something missing, because even if we found our purpose or calling, so to speak, we're never quite sure that we have it quite right. Purpose is born out of our lives. It's not thrust onto our lives, not put into our lives. It's born out of our experiences, out of who we are becoming. It's a puzzle built over the course of a life spent showing up with a sense of without a sense of purpose. Uncertainty is something to embrace and to enjoy, and the closest that we come to moments of purpose comes in fleeting experiences of flow, where we engage and connect with the world outside of worry and time and thought. These moments are underpinned by the fact that you don't feel purposeful because you're not thinking about purpose. And on the flip side, you feel purposeless when you're trying desperately to feel and find your purpose. The key to purpose, again, is to let go of any need for or attachment to purpose itself. Like, the way to be creative is to stop thinking, I need to be creative. The way to come up with good solutions to problems is to stop thinking, I need to find a solution to this problem. The way to get to sleep is to stop thinking, I need to get to sleep. And if you're going to be alert to dangers, you need to relinquish any thought of being alert. Again, given the changes the UK government made to their lockdown advice, this is powerful stuff from Alan Watts. I listened to this part of the audiobook the same day that slogan changed, which felt very uncanny.
The first thing that the teacher says to the student is, now, you, if you're going to be a good soldier, you've got to be alert constantly, because you never know where the attack's going to come from. Now, you know what happens to you when you try to be on the alert. You think about being alert, and then you're a hopeless prey to the enemy, because you're not alert. You're thinking about being alert. You must be simply awake and relaxed. And then all your nerve ends are working, and wherever the attack comes from, you're ready. They liken this to a barrel of water. The water is just sitting there in the barrel. But the minute you make a hole in the barrel, the water immediately is ready to come out of that hole. So in the same way, the mind, when it is in the proper state, is ready to respond in any direction from which the attack may come. So this man is no longer alert in the sense of taut and anxious. Which way is he going to come? See? He's just sitting there. Like a cat sits there. And the minute anything happens, it's right there. Because it didn't have to overcome any set in a direction opposite to that from which the attack comes. If you are set for the attack to come from there, and it comes from here, you have to pull back from there and go there, but that's too late. So you sit in the middle, and you don't expect the attack from any particular direction.
The way for us to become is to just embrace the process and become, to release ourselves from pressures and strains to inflict our will on the world. We find purpose when we allow ourselves to be a people, in that sense of the world being a world that peoples, like the apple tree apples. Our becoming is a gradual chipping away over time, showing up, asking questions, questioning answers, embracing our place within this existence. So to finish, I thought it might be helpful to share some questions that I have come to enjoy asking myself, which give me access to thoughts and feelings that are not necessarily at the forefront of my mind normally. You know, these are questions that can help us shape what we're becoming and to move forwards with intentional and deliberate strides. For example, what am I putting up with at the moment? Heavy. What am I not doing right now that I should be doing? What things are frustrating me about myself, about my life, about other people, about work, about my relationships, about whatever it might be? And as I mentioned before, what do I want instead of this? Especially if there's a specific issue that feels pressingly frustrating right now. And so all of these questions help in different ways. You can't rush them. You gotta sort of sit with them, delve into them. Spend days, weeks, months coming back to them. Just chipping away at them, opening them up a little bit more, allowing them to be like that acorn, leading to that oak tree of growth in our own development, awareness. You know, I love to use my journal for this. Without expectation of immediate clarity and answers, just opening up the conversation with myself, just allowing it to flow with no expectation of where it will lead. What am I putting up with at the moment? You know, this allows us to uncover things that we're tolerating, to dig into the frustrations of that, while also allowing ourselves the freedom to put up with things. You know, if the reason for that is worthwhile. You know, having a quality reason makes hard to tolerate circumstances more bearable. But actually talking to yourself about that, like what do I feel like really like I'm tolerating? What do I feel like I'm putting up with? Well, it's this. But actually, that makes this other thing possible. For example, a job that you really hate might be necessary to make the money required to start your business, or to go on that exciting trip that you've been planning for ages. Could be that stepping stone towards a role that you know is the place that you want to be getting to. This helps us return to the present and to a position where we're not blindly wishing for things to be different. Sometimes when we remind ourselves of the big picture, it can even make the thing that we're putting up with a little bit more enjoyable, not only bearable, but actually enjoyable, because we attach it to that outcome. We know that actually this is going to make that other thing possible. What am I not doing right now that I should be doing? This is a question we can address from different angles. You know, we can access those things that we don't want to be doing, but are feeling pressure from elsewhere that tells us that we should be doing them. This can give us chance to assess whether or not we actually really need or really want to do those things. It might also provide access to those things we know would help us, but we're not doing them for some reason. You know, I think of health habits here. The word should can either be a negative, you know, speaking of things that others or an external source deem important for us, like, well, you really should be doing that. You know, you really, really should do this, or you should try this out. These things that are impressed upon us, it's like, yeah, but I don't want to do that. Or it can speak to us of things that we really ought to do if we're serious about some bigger picture goal. And Derek Sivers talks about the difference between what do I want now versus what do I want most. When we know what we want most, we can assess the options in the present in light of that. So if what we want is to be healthy and energized, what I want now being a pint and a burger rather than, I don't know, run and a juice that I'd planned for today, that's seen through a different lens. You know, it doesn't make it sort of easy, but the choice is there. It's simple. You know, what we're becoming is how we engage with those questions. And what do I want most is not just about stuff that we don't have. It's also about the kind of life that you're already living and want to maintain. You know, I want most to live a life of creativity and exploration. I'm already doing that. And I'm committing to it every day, but it requires a commitment and reminders to hold all those instincts and temptations that I might experience up against that spirit. You know, coming back to that idea of spirit that I've talked about a few times this year already. Another thing worth bringing out to play is our inner child. You know, I love how Julia Cameron encourages this in The Artist's Way. One of her exercises is to think of the traits that you enjoyed about yourself as a child, and five accomplishments from when you were a child, you know, and what made them significant to you. This, for me, was like a massively surprising exercise when I did it, when I was doing The Artist's Way a few weeks ago, that chapter. And it uncovered things that I really was not expecting. And so the door to becoming who we are becoming is often unlocked by allowing our inner child to speak up again. We get frustrated, feel dissatisfied, and get a little lost when we try to grow up and grow out of who we supposedly once were, but actually still are. And rather than being a source of growth, this kind of idea that, you know, you've got to grow up, you've got to become sensible and grow out of all of that stuff, can actually really inhibit our kind of growth and our progress and really cast long shadows on our self-concept. It can be a part of that cycle that I was talking about earlier with the shame, taking you away from who you are and into the kind of opposite, so that you can conceal who you are and never show it to people. So much of what we want to become is hidden beneath stories, it's hidden beneath words from other people, hidden beneath scarring experiences. So good at covering our true desires and feelings, choosing instead to skate on the surface of life and do what we assume is expected of us. The only way to really begin the process of unpicking these threads and to step into the fullness of our becoming possibilities is to go deep with ourselves, to allow those buried feelings, those thoughts, those truths to come out in safe and non-self-judgmental ways. You know, this is the power of the morning pages for me, of journaling, writing somewhere I know no one else is going to read, somewhere I can dig and dig and dig. And again, I love how Derek Sivers puts it with his kind of commitment to relentless journaling, where he says, you know, I answer questions, then question answers. I hold up every assumption that I make and ask, well, what if that's not true? And this kind of way of interacting with our own thoughts, our own assumptions, our own, you know, mindsets and that kind of thing, helps us peel back the layers of the onion and find new skins of truth within. This is scary. It's uncomfortable. It feels dangerous at times. You know, a number of times that little voice says, oh no, you can't do that, when I write about a feeling or a desire that I'm attempting to kind of coax to the surface and question and see. And I'm like, who said that? Eventually I might find an answer. Who's telling me I can't say that? you know, there's usually someone or something somewhere that's kind of behind that voice. It might take a little while, but there is usually that character lurking from my past who's become a, well, controlling presence in my present, in my unconscious. A comment from an incidental situation that brought my confidence clattering down in a big heap of, well, I'm not doing that again. Or an experience that didn't go to plan, that wasn't properly processed, and like, okay, I'll probably avoid that in future. And actually, those things add up. They tot up. And they can just take us so far away from what we are deep down wanting to become. What we once were becoming. Gentle and intentional becoming is an ongoing adventure. It never ends. It requires constant alignment, realignment, and review. Just because something was important to me last year doesn't mean it has to be important now. Just because I said I hated something 5 years ago doesn't mean I have to stick to my guns and pretend I still hate it. You know, the humility to move within a spirit of openness and change is the fuel at the core of this kind of becoming. Yeah, there's no space for the ego. There is no accommodation for that kind of judgment that holds us to account for the things that we've matured out of. Not to say we're not responsible for the harm that we might have caused in our past to other people, but that how we are becoming is our choice. I think that's about all I have to say on this. I hope it's made some kind of sense and that it hasn't been too intense. And now I'm going to go and paint a fence and pay the rent. I'm not going to do either of those last two things. I just caught the rhymes. So I just want to say thank you so much for listening and to ask you a big favor. You know, if you want to help support the podcast in ways other than becoming a patron through Patreon, you can help in a very supportive way, which is to rate and comment on the show wherever you're listening to this. Just leave a quick 5-star rating, a little review. Just tell me why you enjoy it. That would be amazing. And then it will kind of condition me into doing more of that thing. If you enjoy one particular part of it, then tell me. I'll probably do more of it. But I won't overdo it, because, you know, you don't want too much seasoning in the salad. I don't know. I'm going to talk too much today. Doing that does help to get this show and previous episodes of it into more of the ears of people searching for help and support with these topics that we're exploring here. And that's great. And I'll be really grateful if you could do that. I'll be back again next month with another episode of the podcast. Until then, do remember that you are an artist, that the world needs your art. Now go and make somebody's day. Angels in disguise, we can be, 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 we can all be angels in disguise, we can be.